I look to a day when people will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. Martin Luther King, Jr. Everyone, and welcome to another episode of Podnuts Pro. I am your host, Marvin B., and we are coming to you live on this last Wednesday of February, and you heard the quote that I did at the beginning of the show in honor of Martin Luther King and the end of Black History Month. We don't want to forget what we're still going through. So, Podnuts Pro is your show, your podcast for business IT support, where we share products, stories, and tips, all in the effort to help you run your business better, smarter, and faster. And that is going to be no different tonight. And we are definitely joined by an industry icon, a titan of industry, Mike Panaki from Network Protocol Specialist. Mike, how are you doing, sir?
I am doing fantastic, Marvin.
Nice, nice. We started a little bit late, folks, because I had to go run and turn down my air. I know that you hate hearing that in a time where a lot of the country is freezing. Mike, how's the weather up there? You're in Seattle?
Yes, just outside of Seattle. You know, this time of year, our weather, when we get up in the morning, our Amazon Echo tells us what the temperature is. And it is almost always somewhere between 37 and 42. You had to turn off your air. I had to turn off my heater out here in the studio. So I think we are not only on opposite ends of the country, but close to opposite ends of the spectrum as far as our weather goes here.
Wow. Well, I do certainly feel for people that are going through. I know we've been following all the people in the Texas area that has just been having a heck of a time, some without power for multiple days. So I know we've got a couple of other MSPs in the area. Some of our vendors are there. So we continue to give you our best wishes and prayers and hope that everything is all right. And I can tell you this, I have been without power for 12 days.
Oh,
it sucks. And I was without power when it was hot. I can't imagine being without power when it's cold. So,
well, and that's usually when we lose power. It's when there's snow. I've got a single cylinder diesel generator that runs most everything. And when I'm teaching classes, the whole studio's on UPS, but I tell them that if you see the lights above me go out, I'm going to be booking out the door to go fire up the generator so we can keep going.
Okay. Now, Mike, let's go back a little bit and just do a quick reintroduction to everybody, because my listeners and viewers will remember you as the Fluke Master. And sure. I've had you on the show before. And anytime that people have asked me, hey, where do you get your education and training on your Fluke tools and your network testers, which now NetAlly, and I say, Mike Panaki. That's the guy that basically wrote the book on cable certification and network testing and stuff. So that was, gosh, when did we meet originally? It was many years ago.
It was. Yeah. I don't remember exactly when it was, but we've known each other for a long time.
Yep. Yep. And, you've got the wall of glory behind you.
I do. And I've got a whole other wall of cable testers over there that we use in class. And yeah, I've been, with the OptiView XG, which was one of the early tools that Fluke Networks came out with for network discovery. In fact, I got to say, what's interesting is when we take a look at the Etherscope NXG today, there is code inside that Etherscope NXG that was probably in the OptiView XG when that thing came out in 2000. Mm. And I had asked one of the folks there, you know, do you need some help with training? Little did I know that 20 years later, I would still be training on the same products. But it has gotten me. I've gotten all over the world. I've gotten to go into some phenomenal places and meet some amazing network administrators and so on. And what I found is that a lot of times, everyone, you might have one or two people in an organization that do this type of thing, and nobody else cares about what they're doing. So I like to at least let them know that I care, that I love this stuff. And I don't know what else I'd be doing. This is the best thing ever.
Yeah. Well, I can tell you, I know that I ran into you years ago when I got so frustrated with arguing with the cable guy about one particular cable that we, you know, at the time I didn't know it was a cable issue, but it was a workstation issue and we couldn't find anything wrong with the workstation. And I called the cable guy to check the cable. The cable guy said, yeah, it should be fine. And oh. I remember years ago, you made the comment about, please don't use the S word.
Oh, I hate the S word. And you hear it used in our industry so much, in that somebody will come in and they'll say, well, that should fix it. That should take care of it. And it doesn't. And all you do is, when it doesn't, it knocks your credibility down just a little bit. And also, it sounds like there's a little doubt. Like, well, I'm not really sure. So what I want people to do is be definitive. And how are we definitive? By validating. And that's one of the things that we're going to take a look at today, is how do we go in and validate that what we did actually had the effect that we wanted it to have.
Yep. So we are going to be doing that today. So this is, I've decided I'm going to turn this into a series, and Mike, you get to be the first guest that I have on my shows that are going to be called Know Your Network. And we're going to basically focus, I don't know if it's going to be once a month or something like that, but I'm going to take an area of networking that we just need to focus on and give a little bit of tips, give a little bit of best practices, how to troubleshoot, things like that. And today we're going to focus on VLANs. But before we do, I just want to throw up the little logo up there in the right corner. If you're watching the video, you will see I put the logo for NetAlly up there. If you are listening to the audio, NetAlly, while they are not an official sponsor of the podcast, I have to thank them so very much for basically outfitting me with my handheld testers over the last few years. I have spent good money on them, and they have come in at times and said, hey, you've done a lot for us in terms of referring business, and we'd like to take care of you in this respect and that respect. So here we are with Mike Panaki. We're going to talk about that, and they're going to be on the show in a couple of weeks, and we're going to do a complete overview of all the NetAlly products. So I wanted to make sure that I gave a nice shout out to NetAlly for all that they've done there. All right. So Mike, let me tell you how I got to this topic first. A couple of months ago, I had a client that called me in a panic because stuff started to not work. And it went little by little throughout the office. And this was a medical office that was spread across an entire floor, and they had kind of piecemealed their offices. So they initially were in one office and they expanded into another, but instead of properly redoing cables, all we did was they just wanted to run connector cables and we connected switches. So they had a total of 5 switches across 4 offices.
Okay.
Now, luckily they were all managed switches and I had set up VLANs for them. Okay. But on this particular day, they had a camera guy there who was installing his cables and setting up his cameras, and they were IP based.
Okay.
Rather than call me, he told them, no, I do networking. I'm just as good as your guy. I'll take care of it. And what he started doing was unplugging cables and plugging them back in into different ports. So all of the VLAN stuff that I had set up no longer functioned, and they had iPads that were on a VLAN for their medical program that they had. They were uploading x-rays and pictures to the cloud. That stopped. They had VLANs for their phones, and it was just a mess. And I had to run over and take care of that for them. And I would love to say that that was the end of it, but it happened twice.
What?
Yes. And I was trying to explain VLANs to this guy so that we can set up his camera system on its own VLAN, but put it on the same physical network. And he's like, right. Oh yeah, I understand that. So we wanted to give him a 50 VLAN, and I set up my stuff and, you know, tagged all the ports, and he went into his camera system and started manually putting in IP addresses with a 50 subnet and didn't understand why it wasn't working. And I said, well, did you tag the VLAN? Well, there's no place to do it. I thought I just typed in, you know, 192.168.50.whatever. And I was like, no. So I've talked about that on this show. Some of the users said, hey, maybe you should do a show on VLANs. And I said, okay, we'll do that. So I brought you here to help me explain what a VLAN is, how they work, and when to use them.
Cool.
So
it's going to be fun.
Yep. So that was my lovely story, and I hope that you don't have any stories as bad, but I'm sure that you have at least one, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's one of those things. I'm sure that we both have mountains of stories of people coming in and trying to redo something we did. I had a coffee shop here in town that, you know, mistakenly I set their network up, put a camera system in, got them all set up. And I got a call one day saying, hey, we can't run any credit cards. The network's down. I said, but what changed? Well, one of our customers was helping us set up a wireless access point, and they said they could, you know, they could do it. And the person reconfigured everything, had no idea what the network was doing. And they came in and just started trying to change everything. And it was at that point that, you know, I kind of stepped back and said, well, it's your network now. I was just doing it for free coffee. And, you know, my dad was a management trainer his whole career. And one of the things that, you know, he always went by was seek first to understand before you go in and make any changes. So understand why that was set up the way it was and how it was set up before you go in and try doing something that you think is better.
Okay. So why don't we start with what is a VLAN? Because I know that I try not to get technical in my explanations, so I don't go and learn, you know, the fine detail of how to explain it. I usually tell my clients it is a way to use one physical infrastructure to separate out networks by giving them different IP subnets. And of course, they gloss over the eyes. And I don't understand what's a subnet. And I just tell them it's, you know, basically setting out separate addresses for each division, computers, phones, cameras, wireless, so that they can operate on their own network and not interfere with your stuff. So that way, in terms of a HIPAA client, we can say your guests can come in and be on the internet and never touch your network. That's what we do with VLANs. It's basically a virtual network over a physical infrastructure.
Yes.
How good is
that? That's exactly it. And really, it's nothing more than a tag. I mean, all we're doing is we're adding an extra 4 bytes to each frame to say that this frame is on this VLAN. And so every port that is configured for that tag can talk on that network. Every port that doesn't have it can't. And so it gives us a way to create, I mean, like the name, I guess like the name said, virtual local area networks within one physical network, just as you were saying.
All right. Now, I don't want to get too technical here, but what adds that extra 4 bytes of data that you said?
So what happens is, let's say I go into a switch port, and I assign that switch port to a VLAN. And so there's a couple of different types of ports that we have when we're working with VLANs. And the most simple is what is considered to be an access port. And with an access port, to the device that's connected to the access port, it has no idea about VLANs. It is receiving packets that have no VLAN tag. It's sending packets that have no VLAN tag. But as soon as those packets arrive at that port, the switch looks in its configuration to determine which VLAN has been assigned to that port. And when that packet comes into that port, that switch wedges 4 bytes into the packet that fall in right after the source MAC address and before the ether type. And so that little 4 bytes in there says, now this packet belongs to this VLAN. And so for the device that's connected to that VLAN, let's say like those cameras, if we put those on the person was installing, if we put those on an access port, they don't have to be tagged. They don't have to understand it. But now they are on, they're on that VLAN because that port's been configured for that VLAN. Now, if a packet arrives at that port that has a VLAN tag, the switch will rip that VLAN tag out of that packet and send that packet out the port without the tag. So for an access port, what we're doing is we're taking and putting that entire port and making it part of a particular virtual network. Now, the other type of port that we have is a trunk port. And a trunk port is where we have VLAN tagged packets. So packets are actually coming out of the port that have a VLAN tag. And a very common use of this is where I have voice over IP phones. Oftentimes, what we'll find is that we'll have a port that has what's known as an untagged VLAN. So some of the packets are coming out without tags. Some of the packets are coming out with tags. So what the phone does is the phone is listening to everything, but it's only bringing in the packets that have tags for it. So that way I can put the phone on one VLAN and the PC on the other VLAN. So in a VLAN network, we may have some ports, no tags whatsoever. We may have other ports where all the packets going in and out will have tags on.
Okay. So what I say sometimes to my clients to help them understand that is think of it as a theater. If you've ever been to a play or a musical and you get a ticket to go into the theater, and it might be tagged with general admission or orchestra or balcony. And as you're going into the theater, somebody's there to help you look at your ticket and then tell you which way to go. Does that kind of sound right?
Okay. Yeah. So with a switch, I mean, when you think about a switch, when we work with switch, we have our bridge forwarding table. Mm-hmm. So it looks at the destination address and says, oh, it's on that port. Well, if we think of VLANs, it's one layer above that. We could have multiple ports that are part of the VLAN. So we might say this broadcast packet goes out to all of these ports. So instead of going out to every port on the switch, it becomes a subset of ports on the switch that receive that.
All right. Now, we also should note that we're doing VLANs with managed switches.
Yes.
So just a regular, plain old, dumb switch or hub isn't going to cut it.
Nope. No, because we have to be able to log into that switch and configure it. And if we can't get in there, if there's not a way to manage the switch, and we see that there's some switches out there. Like I use a lot of Netgear GS105Es, and I set up a port mirror on them so we can tap them in line. They're okay, but I've got to use Netgear's special ProSafe utility to go in and configure that switch. And I have to be on the same network as the switch. So the downside there is, if I'm here and Uta that works with me at her office is having a problem with her switch, I can't see the configuration of that switch remotely. So those switches, I use those as basic little network taps. But beyond that, I am all for switches that I can web into and change the configuration on them.
All right. Now, does it really matter? I know that there's a whole section now that it used to be fully managed or unmanaged. And right. now there's this whole section of smart switches or web switches. So is there any real difference in those switches that are able to do VLAN? Like, are all smart switches able to VLAN?
I would say most of them are.
Okay.
I mean, yeah, it's ones, if you can typically, if you can open either an application on your computer or web into it and change the configuration, most of those support VLAN tagging.
Okay. All right. Now, you mentioned earlier, so we have the types of port as access and trunking.
Yep.
And then there's another one called tagging. And what's the real difference between tagging versus trunking?
Well, oftentimes with a trunk port, that is, we would typically see that between two switches. So that's where everything is VLAN tagged on there. Whereas we may have a port, kind of a hybrid port, where we have a untagged network, and then we have a then we have tagged networks on top of that. So a device that has no concept of VLANs can plug into either an access or a hybrid port or tagged port, and it can still communicate. But it's going to be on whatever that default VLAN is for that port.
Right. And most default VLANs are the number one, right?
Well, not necessarily.
Okay.
So I'll tell you what. Let me bring up one of my switches. How's that sound?
That sounds good. So folks, if you are listening to the audio portion of the show, you may want to stop and head over to the video. And you can find that by going over to podnutspro.com and searching for this episode. And I will have a link to the video that you can get on and see what we're doing in the replay video.
Let's see.
And as Mike gets that set up. So I have already made a mistake by saying that the default VLANs are number one. I guess that's not always the case.
It's not necessarily a mistake. It is, let's see. Let me find the right switch here. And I will share my screen in just a second.
Okay.
Now, and I can, like, a lot of my network is made up of the GS105T Netgear switches. I find that they work well with the equipment that I'm using. So what I'm going to do is let me maximize this, and I will share that screen.
Okay.
All right. So here's the configuration. So when we were talking about managed switches, in this particular switch, I can go in and put in the IP address. I can web into it. So now what I did was when I initially come in, it brings me into system, gives me some information about it. So if I come into switching, we see that there's a VLAN tab up here. So if I go to VLAN, it shows me which VLANs I have out here. So what I've done is I've told this switch that we've got a VLAN for the office, one for the studio, one for guest, one for home, and one for AT&T. So, well, we didn't lose power lately. We did lose internet for 3 days. And I'll tell you, my neighbors were about ready to come unglued. I was a little concerned because I had a class coming up. So what I did was I went out and updated my AT&T Wi-Fi hotspot. But because of my coverage, I had to put it upstairs close to a window.
Okay.
So I created a VLAN that traverses my entire network that is for that AT&T hotspot. So instead of running another cable upstairs, I'm able to plug that VLAN into VLAN 86 upstairs and communicate with it down here in the studio. So it allows me to create a separate network. It's internet access across the same wire. And that's essentially what VLANs are always doing. But as you mentioned, I've got my guest network. So when my kids had friends over, they connected to the guest network. And there's a rule in my router that says the guest network shall never talk to any of the internal networks. So they could get internet access, but they couldn't get to any of my network attached storage drives or anything like that.
All right.
So if I come in here to advanced and I go to my VLAN membership, so what this does is we see that we could take, let's say, VLAN 10. That's my office network. So if I expand the switch ports, What this does is it shows which ports VLAN 10 is tagged on and which ports VLAN 10 is untagged on. So on port 1, anytime a packet goes out of port 1 for VLAN 10, it's got a VLAN tag stuffed in there that says, I'm a tagged packet. So any device connected to port 1 can read that tag and see that traffic that's on VLAN 10. Ports 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, it's untagged. So before the switch transmits that packet, it strips that VLAN tag out and sends it out as an untagged packet. So any device that's connected to 2 through 6, if it sends out a DHCP request, that DHCP request, when it enters that switch, is going to get tagged with 10. So from that point on, it's on the office network. So I can select whether a port is a tagged port or an untagged port. So if I want that device on, we'll say on VLAN 10, I just make this untagged. So if I go to VLAN 11 and we look at that, so VLAN 11 is tagged on every port. So if a device is smart enough to use a VLAN tag, my wireless access points, then if I plug in here, they can communicate on VLAN 11, but only if they are capable of putting that VLAN 11 tag on each packet. Now, I talked about the default VLAN. And what we see is that on a lot of switches, this is known as the PVID. And so with the PVID, what we do is we give it, we tell it the VLAN. So there's one. You mentioned one before.
Right.
So there's one in there. So if I don't care what the VLAN is, I'll just leave one on there. You have to have something on there in these switches. But in this case, if I want this port to be a port where a device could communicate that doesn't need to do any tagging, I need to tell it not only untag the packet on VLAN 10, but I need to say that anytime you transmit a packet or receive a, anytime you transmit a packet, you need to take and strip the tag off if it's on VLAN 10. So in this case, this port is now part of the office network and a device can communicate on that port without need, without having to understand VLAN tags.
All right. Now, in this case here, 2 through 6, is this saying that only 10 can go through, and meaning a VLAN 1 would not be able to go through, or any of the other VLANs?
So in this case, for any other VLAN to go through there, we would have to put a tag on it.
Okay.
So let me show you, I'm going to show an example.
So the default, for 2 through 6, their default VLAN is 10.
Yes.
Okay.
Yep. All right. Exactly.
Sounds good.
So what I do is for every port where it is untagged, I need to come in. So in this case, VLAN 10, for every port where that's untagged, I need to come in here and I need to give that a default VLAN. I need to say you're on VLAN 10. So not only do I untag it here, but I have to set the PVID.
Okay. Now, for a lot of novice people like me, I never go in and set the PVID. I just leave it to whatever it is, in most cases, 1, so that anytime a computer gets plugged in, it's obviously on VLAN 1. And if I want to set up phones or something else, that's where I'll create a separate VLAN for those devices. And then I will tag them so that VLAN 1 and whatever VLAN I want, whether it's 10, 20, 30, can go across that. But I like the fact that I didn't realize, and I did use Netgear for a very long time, just so you know, but I switched away from them. But I didn't know that you can go in and make the default VLAN different for certain ports.
Yes. Yep. And so then that way it'll communicate. So one of the questions that came in is, have you ever had to configure a VLAN on the device itself.
Right.
So one of the things that we find, I set up a Linux box, and I wanted it to have traffic come in one network and go out another. So that device had two interfaces on it. Now, one way we could have accomplished that is by having two physical Ethernet ports. One plugged into this network, one plugged into that network. But I was able to configure Linux, so we said, this interface is on this VLAN. So anytime it sent traffic out that interface, it would send that traffic with the VLAN tag on it. So now, let's say that it sent the traffic out VLAN 11. What would happen is the switch in this case would receive that traffic on VLAN 11, and that shows up as a tagged port. So it would just take that traffic for VLAN 11 and just pass it through right on to VLAN 11.
Okay.
So we can configure devices, and it depends on what the capabilities of the device are, but you brought up a good one, Marvin, and that's phones. Most phones out there are capable of tagging packets with a VLAN. In fact, with DHCP, one of the standard setups is we will see a phone boot up on the default VLAN and send out a DHCP request. And the DHCP server responds with an IP address, but also there's a option in there that says the voice VLAN is VLAN 11. So the phone will reboot and come back up again and then send out a DHCP request on VLAN 11. So that way, we don't have to actually configure the phone itself, but we can use DHCP to tell the phone which VLAN it should be using.
All right, and that would be setting up in a DHCP server to tell which VLANs to do that for.
Yes.
Now, do you do that with regular servers? Do you do that with another switch or a router, firewall?
As far as we would need a DHCP server that supported options.
Okay.
And so I don't remember the option number on that one, but that would be where we would have to have a DHCP server where we could go in and within that DHCP scope, say that, because we can have options for default routers, options for DNS servers. I'm probably not going to go in and configure, my Netgear router with additional DHCP options.
We just had another comment in the chat that said layer 3 switches.
Yes.
So, most of us use layer 2.
Yep.
But layer 3 are obviously capable of doing a lot of this for us.
Yes.
Okay. Now, we've talked about, what a VLAN is, how it works, and we've talked about different uses. But in terms of, say, security, because that's one of the things that we always talk about, well, if you want to make your network secure, use VLANs.
Yep.
So the short question is that true? And what are some other types of uses for VLANs?
So from a security standpoint, to get from one VLAN to another, I have to go through a router. Because when it comes right down to it, when it comes right down to it, if I've got two switches right here, if I want to get from this switch to this switch, I can go through a router. So if I've got one subnet on this switch and one subnet on this switch, to get between these two, I would put a router in between them. VLANs really aren't any different than doing that same thing just in one box.
Okay.
So what we find is that our routers are going to route between, and I don't want to get too far in the weeds, but broadcast domains, right? So I will have an IP subnet defined to a network, and to get from that IP subnet to another IP subnet, I'm going to go through a router.
Okay.
So in a way, we can think of a VLAN as a subnet. So we would typically have one IP address scope, address range on one VLAN. So if I want to get from one IP network, let's say my security cameras, over to another IP network where the people that administer those cameras are, I'm going to have to go through my router. Now, when I go through that router, this offers the ability to come in and start putting in access rules. So I can say that only people from this network can access this network. And that's where our VLANs start coming in, is that by going into the router and configuring who can get from one network to another, we can apply rules that will restrict somebody from getting to a network they shouldn't get to.
All right. So the short version for a lot of people is we separate out the networks and we allow internet access. So a lot of it is done through, say, SonicWall firewalls or WatchGuard or something like that. And each subnet is completely separate of the other. They can't cross over, you know, cross streams, as the Ghostbusters would say.
Yes.
But there's a lot of times where, say, we do want somebody that comes in on a guest Wi-Fi network to be able to print to a printer, but we don't want them to have access to the rest of the physical local area network. So that's where putting printers on a VLAN,
yep,
and giving the guest Wi-Fi access to that VLAN would work, right?
You bet. So I could give the guests access to the printer. So I could say the guest VLAN, that subnet, that IP address range, has access through the router to get to the printer VLAN, which has an IP address range associated with it, that they could go through the router and get to those printers. And then the people within the building could also get from their subnet to the printer subnet, but the guest subnet can't get to the administrative subnet.
Okay. Now, a lot of times I hear texts talk about the fact that if you've got less than 50 computers or devices or something, it's just, there's no reason to do a VLAN. You know, it's small enough to be a flat network and it's really not necessary. So at what point do you recommend that people always do a VLAN?
So, I mean, there was a time where the number of broadcasts on a network could adversely impact a machine. So those days are, let's say, they're pretty much gone. I wouldn't hesitate. We could put a couple thousand machines on a single broadcast domain. So put a couple thousand, set up an IP subnet where, you know, we had 2048 usable IP addresses. We could put them out there. And we're not going to see a level of broadcasts out there that are going to be high enough to really cause any adverse impact to those machines. So that number has gone up significantly over the years. I was recently working with a customer that has Wi-Fi across a number of their offices, and they created one VLAN for all of their guest wireless that traverses their wide area network. So if you're in one location, you see the wireless users everywhere. Okay. I don't know if I'd do that, but I would say, you know, 50, we could have, yeah, really thousands of devices in the same subnet. Really, when we start deploying VLANs, that is where we're putting up boundaries. And we don't want somebody on one VLAN. We want to be able to control whether somebody on one VLAN can get to another VLAN. I think that's the one of the best ways that I can think of it, is we have segmented those apart. So now we can implement controls if we want.
Okay. So you mentioned earlier, so you're a big Netgear guy. And I was. I now use Arachnus. Actually, I still have a lot of Netgear stuff that I sometimes deploy in an emergency. But what are the types of other equipment that's in your stack to work with VLANs?
I've got a really nice D-Link. I did a webcast recently with NetAlly and D-Link, and we did it on Power over Ethernet. And I've got one of their 1510 switches in the stack. And that's got 24 ports of PoE, gig ports with PoE, and it's got four ports that are capable of doing up to 10 gig. Now, what I love about some of these mid-size switch vendors is that they implement some pretty interesting things. And one of the things that D-Link did that I thought was interesting in the area of PoE is you can configure the IP address of the device that's connected to that port in the switch. Let's say a camera. And the switch will ping that camera. And if the camera stops responding, the switch will kill power to that port and then bring the power back up again. So if it's a PoE device, we can have the switch redo a power cycle on the device if it stops responding. I thought, yeah, that we may not want to use that for every PoE device, but yeah, that's kind of an interesting approach of how we can do that. So
that's a D-Link, you said, right?
What's that?
That was a D-Link?
Yes.
You happen to remember the model off the top of your head?
I think it's the DGS 1510.
Okay. All right. That sounds interesting. I mean, that actually does sound good. I mean, I've got actually the location of the story where the camera guy was twiddling around. For some reason, they have cameras that go out all the time. And I guess that would be nice to be able to just, hey, let's reset the PoE and see if it's, you know, just needs to be reset. And they wouldn't have to call them all the time.
Well, and a lot of these switches that they sell as part of their cameras. And so they have a number of features in there that are kind of directed at, you know, we're going to go in and make this a little bit easier to use if you're using a camera in there.
Okay. All right. So let's now talk about, because we're going to run way over time, but we'll say as long as you're willing to stay with us. But I wanted to talk about, I guess the thing is, we talked about logging into the switches in order to do these configurations. But yes, a lot of times we are on site either at an unknown location where we're asked to come in and troubleshoot. And one of the reasons that I so love this Etherscope is that I can detect VLANs without having to log in the switches.
Yep.
And let me see here. I think I've got, share my screen here real quick. I'm not going to have a ton of stuff like you, but I will, let's see, share this, that. So there is my Etherscope that I've got now on my office network here.
Cool.
And I've been letting Discovery run for quite some time. And if I scroll down here, so as you can see, I have a Netgear switch here in my office. And I can already tell that I've got these VLANs configured. I've got six VLANs inside of that switch.
Okay.
And then, of course, when I go to interfaces, so the black arrow on the Etherscope says that the port is up, whereas the white arrow down says that it's not in use. But I can also see, so if I go to port 3, I can see that port 3 has VLANs 1, 7, 8, and 10 as active.
Yep.
So this is what I love when I can go on site and after I've configured the ports, hit save, gone through and connected my devices, and then all of a sudden something's not working, you know, somebody's not able to get Wi-Fi access on a particular VLAN, all I have to do is plug this back in and say, did I set up that port correctly? And I can do that using the Etherscope.
So I'll tell you, one thing that's really cool for helping customers out is I've got an auto repair shop here in town I've been working it with for years. I put in their voice over IP system and so on. So what I did was, in addition to the Netgear and the D-Link, the other switches I work with quite a bit that either you kind of love them or hate them are MikroTiks. And I found that, you know, it's kind of a convoluted way of setting things up. But those switches are kind of like the Legos of Ethernet switches to me. I can take one of these little portable switches and I can bridge two ports together. Quick little story. I was traveling with my wife and we were in Germany. And we stayed in this hotel room and we couldn't log into the wireless network for whatever reason. But they made the mistake of putting a wireless AP in my room. So what I did was I bridged two ports together on my switch and I came out of the wall into one port, out of that port into their AP. So now their AP was working just fine. But now I could use that bridged port as the outside interface on my NAT and I could set up my own little network. So with these little, with a little $50 router, I'm able to reconfigure this thing and you can save the configurations in a file. And they support VLAN tagging and all that. So I can move back and forth. But what I did was I set up a MikroTik router here at my office. And I've got a VPN tunnel that connects to the auto repair shop. So I can plug my Etherscope into the router here and do a discovery and include their subnet there. So I can discover their entire network, how all their switches are configured using the Etherscope without ever going on site there.
Nice.
So it gives us this power, but we can reach out through the VPN tunnel and be able to connect in.
All right. So I just mentioned something that I use. Now, I don't necessarily have a best practice when it comes to VLANs. So do you have any sort of thing that you kind of tell techs, hey, you should have this as your philosophy when it comes to VLANs?
You know, it's kind of like IP subnets in that, number one, have a plan. And a lot of years ago when I was living in California, I was asked to come out and help a city there figure out what was going on with their network. And I noticed that they had set up this IP address scheme where like Fire Station 51 was 51.0.0.0. How many firefighters do you have there? I mean, that's 16 million addresses that you've got in that IP address block. And they had assigned for each different fire department a different Class A network. And I said, what are you going to do when you connect to the internet? And that's when I developed my TWNH theory. And my TWNH theory is that will never happen. And somebody at that city, not a small city, said, we will never connect to the internet. And let's just say that I got a call about 3 months later saying, we're trying to figure out how to connect to the internet and we can't get anywhere. So when it comes to best practices with VLANs, the size of the VLAN tag field allows us to have 1,024 VLANs. So what we want to do is we want to plan out our VLANs before we start deploying them. We want to come up with a numbering scheme. Now, that numbering scheme could align. I think you said you oftentimes align it with the subnet.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So that way, I know if I want to put something on the 192.168.50 network, that's going to go on VLAN 50.
Right.
Now, I can talk all I want about planning out VLANs. I can tell you mine don't line up that way because mine have been more cobbled together. But if you're sitting down to plan out a network, it's best to say, here are our functional areas. Here are groups that we would want to put together. So let's come up with a VLAN for them. And then let's decide how many IP addresses we're going to need for that group. Because it could be that the number of addresses we want to assign to that group goes beyond, is more than 254. And if it's more than 254, we can't have VLAN 50 and 51 because right. 50 and 51 would now become one subnet. So depending on the subnet mask we use, which is a whole nother, we could spend probably a couple days talking about that.
Right.
So it's planning that out and giving yourself room to grow. Anyone that's on this podcast that remembers the days of programming in BASIC. You didn't write line numbers 1, 2, 3, 4. You did 10, 20, 30, 40. because when you had to come back and add some lines of code in, you needed to add in line number 11. And so the other part with VLANs is I would give myself some room between my VLAN numbers just in case you've got to put something in there. So not stacking them right on top of each other.
Okay. That's kind of what I did. That's why I would go 10, 20, 30, and that would give me room to grow there. Now, I do want to say, I know we're coming up at the top of the hour. My podcasts are usually about an hour long. Those of you that are watching live, we are going to go a little bit long. And when we end the actual podcast, Mike is going to stay through the outro and into a post show. So I see that there are some questions in the chat that we will get to. So if you can hang around a little bit later, we'll answer those. But we're going to move on and try to get through some of these other things that we want to get discussed, because it's a lot of information in this VLANing. So obviously have a plan. Now, when it comes to documentation, because I think that's one of the biggest areas that techs like me don't have time to do. We just can't document everything.
Yep.
How do you, you know, outside of just physically writing down what your VLAN structure is, how do you do your documentation?
So when I first started working with VLANs was probably about 98. We were ripping out token ring in a 43-story building, and we were replacing it with Cisco 5500 switches. And we were putting VLANs in, and we experimented with all kinds of things. We went to a graphics art store, and we bought pinstriping. And we experimented with putting pinstriping on a port so that we color coded all the VLANs. But the problem with VLANs is it's really easy to change them. And so now you change the VLAN, how do you change that port? So the easiest way, and I guess that's where, you know, showing something like with the Etherscope, you know, you showed where you could go in and do a discovery,
right?
And discover what was out there as far as that goes. I'm going to bring up Link Live real quick.
Okay.
So when we do a discovery with the Etherscope, and I kind of put that right over the top of the control panel here. Let me fix this.
Okay. And folks, when he mentions Link Live is the web portal that if you have any of the NetAlly tools, the Etherscope that we're talking here, the Link Runner, the Net Sprinter, or the Link Sprinter, I should say, even the little thing, whenever you do test, you can save those tests up to the web portal, and then you can make notes and have them for records. The Etherscope has a nice little analysis tab, and I think that's what Mike is going to show us. Is that it?
Yep. Okay. So what I did was I came in here, and I connected the Etherscope to my network, and I let it do a discovery. So it discovered 114 devices. Now, as part of that discovery, what I was able to do is say not only discover what's on my local network, but I came in and put in IP subnets that are located throughout my network. So for instance, 10.0.12 is Uta's office. So that's across a VPN tunnel. So this goes out and discovers all the devices on the network. And just like Marvin showed, we can come in and click on a device and say, show me what VLANs are on there, show me the interfaces. But what I did is, after I did my discovery, I came up here and I said, upload that discovery to Link Live. So I want to take what I discovered, I want to push it up to the cloud. So if I come back to Link Live, and I come in here and I select my analysis files, we see that we've got the PodNuts presentation. So that was the discovery I did just before we started. So there's a couple of things that we can do with that discovery. I'll show you the kind of a fun one right now. This is something they just recently added. But this is the topology map.
I like this.
So in this case, what it does is it draws out a map of my network. And so I can see that, like, this micro tick access point right here, I've got all kinds of devices attached to that. In fact, it's a micro tick 802.11 ACAP that's right above me. And it used to be a much lower powered access point till I ran this and I saw how many devices were using it. But we can see that we've got all these different devices and they have different IP subnets because we have, this is a VLAN trunk running to that access point. So each SSID is on a different VLAN. But we're going to come back. And if I go to view analysis, what this is going to do is this shows me all my different devices. So now, if I come into, I'm going to search for UTA. So now, this shows me everything that's located at UTA's office. There's UTA's switch, there's UTA's router. So if I click on UTA's switch, it shows me the interfaces. And I can come in, and it shows me what's connected to each one of those ports, and it shows me what VLAN it's on. So hers is pretty simple. That switch, really no VLANs configured in that everybody's on VLAN 1. So let's get rid of that filter. And we could say the attic switch. How about that one? So this switch is up in my attic. And in this case, here I can see that here we've got the default VLAN is VLAN 1. Here, this port that the camera, this is my package camera. I've got an IP camera that points straight down at a box I put on my front porch where delivery people put packages in there. So I can just look out there and see if I have a package. Well, there's my package cam. That's on VLAN 10. We can see that my DVR for my cameras, VLAN 10. So when it comes to documenting, trying to put labels on the switches is good if we're really good about changing those every time. But what we find is that in some cases, the best way to do it is to have a tool that's going to be able to discover the network and show us what the picture of the network is at this moment in time.
And this is fantastic because the fact that you saved this analysis, the next time something happens and you run a new discovery, you can upload it and compare what changed.
Yes. And, you know, Kevin said he's got a link spreader, which is a phenomenal little tool. And what is so cool about things like the link spreader is that if we have CDP or LLDP configured on our switches, when we connect to the switch, it's going to send us a packet that says, you're connected to this switch on this port. And what we can do in Link Live is I can put in a comment or a label. So if I say studio, and I could say, how about studio port 1A? What this does is this shows that my Link Runner G2, I put a label on it for the wall plate number. So now I can see that port in the studio, port 1A is connected to this switch right here. I can see my link information. I can see my VLAN information. I can see the switch information. So this allows me to come in and see what port and switch that is connected to. So as I'm going in and validating each one of those ports when I hook them up, if I put a label in there that says this port is on this switch, or that this is the wall plate, now I'm building a database of how everything is patched together. And it helps us reduce the number of times we're crawling under desks.
Hmm. And again, it's nice because here's your documentation and your validation. You can show the customer, here's how I set it up, and all of these little green icons means that it's working.
Yep. And the other one, let's see. No, nothing for that. Oh, hang on. Let me clear 1A. There we go. So this is Studio Switch 1. So in this case, you know, right here, it shows me that here's Studio Switch 1. Here's connected to port Gig 4. Gives us the information. And here's the neat thing. It shows me what the VLAN configuration was at the time I took this snapshot. So how often do we run into the situation where somebody says, what changed? Because nothing breaks, rarely. Power supply goes out. But rarely does something break when somebody hasn't changed something in there. So if you say, so what did you change the VLANs on there? No. Well, if we went in and we validated that port at the time we set it up, here is a snapshot in time of what was configured on that port at the time that we configured it. We could see the speed and duplex. We can see the PoE information. We've got a snapshot of what's going on in there. In fact, we can even take a snapshot and upload it and associate it with that. And this is great for those APs that are really hard to find. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, how many times have you had a desk that somebody put in front of a wall plate with the solid back on it? You're reaching up underneath that desk trying to plug into the jack, or you stick your phone up there to take a picture to see what the wall plate looks like. Yep.
Every attorney that has to have a big desk with a hutch.
Yep. Show up with your, you know, I show up with my Milwaukee with a hole saw on it. Here, we'll fix that.
So this is very nice for documentation. Okay, so you basically do what I've started to do, is to just save these analyses, and you know, you can actually export them and save them in a file somewhere, but having them in this link live means they're always accessible.
Yes, it is. And it's accessible from my phone. It's accessible from my tablet, you know, wherever I'm at. So if somebody says, hey, what's connected to that switch? Well, here's the neat thing. I can come over and tap on the IP address of that switch, and we'll clear out the studio desk. And now this will show me every test result ever that had that switch IP address in it.
And there's your history going back and snapshots in time.
Yep, 389 results with that.
Wow. Out of 3,368.
So back on VLANs, let me just show something real quick.
Okay.
And that is on the Etherscope. If I come into auto test, the idea behind auto test is that I can come in here and I can say, I want to do a test on this port. Now, this port, I expect to have PoE on. So I'm going to turn on PoE. And I expect that as far as power goes, this is a class 3 switch. And I'm going to turn on true power. So it actually will draw 13 watts. So now I can hit start, and what this is going to do is it's going to connect to the switch port. It's going to look to see if we have PoE. It is going to see what speed and duplex do I connect at. It shows me I'm on an untagged VLAN, and also we see packets for VLANs 14, 10, and 12. So this tells us that in addition to being on VLAN 11 right here, we also have access to these VLANs. I got 47.36 volts. I had 47.36 before I drew power. I had 46.25 after. So that tells me what my voltage drop is when I applied the true power draw of 13 watts. So that's great. This is a quick validation that tells me that worked, and I could come in and I could add my comment and say, I'll say Studio 2B, and I'll save that result. So now I could say that this wall plate is on this port. Well, that's great. But now, let's say I wanted to validate VLANs 10, 12, and 14 to make sure that those were working. So I told somebody, hey, you could plug a VoIP phone in here, you could plug this in, that's going to work. With something like the Link Runner G2, I could do one VLAN at a time. With the etherscope, what they put in is what's called profile groups. So I can come in here and I can save these groups so I don't have to create it each time. But I could say, I want to check VLAN 10, 12, and 14. So each one of these has a different profile. They can go out and make sure that different devices are available. So now when I hit start, it's going to check VLAN, the untagged VLAN first. Then it's going to go and add a VLAN tag to every packet with VLAN 10 and try and get an IP address. Then after that's done, it's going to do the same thing for 12. It's going to do the same thing for 14. So with one push of a button, I can now validate all these VLANs. So if I've gone in and I've built out a trunk port and I say, Marvin, when you plug your switch into that cable, you'll have access to all the VLANs you need. So if I want to be definitive about that, I could come in and validate it with this. And for the last 25 years, I've been part of the Interop trade show. And back in 2007, I was a lead network engineer. And so what we would do is build the entire network in a warehouse in San Francisco and then ship it to wherever the show was. Like the show I was doing was New York. Well, when you go to a trade show like that, you have a very short period of time to set up. You're paying for that entire show floor. So we needed to make sure everything worked the second we got there. So what we did was we set up a process like this that we validated all of our connections before we put that equipment on a semi-truck and headed off to New York. So what I did was I get my green cables on all these, everything passed. So I go to VLAN 10. Hey, I got an IP address. I could get to my Raspberry Pi that's running DNS. I could get to my primary router. We come back. VLAN 12 worked. Perfect. VLAN 14 worked. I could even add in Wi-Fi tests in here, but this is a great way that I could come in. And so now I could come in. I've got my profile group. I could say save. I could say save as. I could say,
We're technicians, not typers.
10, 12, 14, right? So now if I loaded a different profile group, I could say empty. So I created one that has nothing in it. So now there's nothing. Now if I come back to that same connection to retest it, I can say load. I could say save as, and I could say default plus that, hit save. I come back here and it's empty. Okay.
Because you saved empty over top of your default.
Yeah. Well, okay. We're going to have to look at that one.
That'll be interesting. So just to give you an idea, I actually did this on Monday. I had a internet and phone installation. And we were taking out the old router for the ISP, putting in a new one, and they were actually managing the PoE for the phones.
Okay.
And they were creating new VLANs for their phones, and of course they had to do an IP pass-through for any computers behind the phone. And they didn't have enough ports on the switch that they brought. They brought just a 24-port switch. We had over 30 phones. And the activation technician on the phone said, well, we can just use the old PoE switch. Do you want to do that? I said, fine. So we connected phones to the old PoE switch and got all the phones up, except the phones that were on the old switch, for some reason, were not connecting. They weren't getting their IP address. They weren't doing that. And so they were confused. Now, I had the previous profile with the previous VLANs for the old switch.
Okay.
They weren't able to get in and manage the old PoE switch. But they had configured the new switch with VLAN 150 for the phones and 160 for the data. And okay. I said, well, the old configuration was VLAN 200, wasn't it? And they said, well, we don't know. So I pulled out my Etherscope, plugged it in. I already had that VLAN group set up, verified it, and said, yep, here it is. And they were like, oh, okay. So then they switched their new configuration to match the old one, and we got everything up and running. So saving all those configurations is great. And the fact that I just thought, you know, how did we have it set up before? Well, I had documentation to show how it was. So fantastic.
Yes.
All right.
Yep.
So we, let's see, we're at, we did pretty good. I thought we would miss out on a lot more stuff. So we're going to have to skip our normal Florida Man segment or random question, because I want to be able to have time to do the post show with people. But before we go, Mike, is there anything else that you wanted to make sure we let the listeners and viewers know about VLANs?
Well, so at some point, to get between VLANs, we have to have a router. And so in that case, we can have a what's known as a router on a stick. And that is where we have one cable that goes from our switch to our router. And that port has every VLAN tagged on it. And then on the router, we tell the router, expect to see traffic from all these different VLANs. So then the router can communicate with each different VLAN, and the router will have a separate IP address for each different VLAN, et cetera. If you don't have a router that understands VLAN tagging, then you would really need to create a separate untagged port for each VLAN and plug that into a separate port on the router. So if you're going to deploy VLANs, you need to have a way to get between the VLANs, and that's going to be your router. So you need to make sure that you have a router that's capable of understanding 802.1Q VLAN tags and routing between those VLANs.
All right. Well, tried to get as much information as we could about VLANs into one little old podcast, and we did okay. As you know, folks, we can go a lot deeper in each of these, and we might do that on a future segment of Know Your Network. And as we end out here, I want to make sure that if you guys have questions, Mike Panaki is with Network Protocol Specialist. His website is nps-llc.com, and you can actually email nps-llc.com. So if you want to know when he does his training sessions, and his training sessions go much, much deeper as he deals with all of these tools and all of these protocols, because you teach everything, Mike. You guys have, we could have talked about how to actually view packets going across VLANs. And I said that might be a bit much for us.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's where we crack out Wireshark and start taking a look at packets, right?
Yep. So, Mike, I want to say thank you very much. For those of you watching, again, we will be staying through the exit here and doing a post-show. We'll get to some of those questions that you had in the chat that we did not get to. If you are listening to the podcast on audio and you want to check out the post-show, go over to podnutspro.com. and find this episode. I will have the link to the video, and the post show will go past the audio portion of the show tonight. And as I mentioned at the start of this show, we are going to be doing these, I'm hoping, once a month, where we will dig into networking 101, 102, 103, and focus on all things that you should know networking. I should tell you that the month of March, however, is dedicated to No Marketing Marv. Most of you know me as somebody who does not do any real networking marketing in my business. I'm going to be having 4 marketing specialists, and they will help us understand why marketing is necessary and talk about all the things that you should do with content marketing, paper marketing, digital marketing, all that stuff that I know nothing about. And those things are going to help you grow your business, and that will be the entire month of March. So on behalf of my good friend Mike Panaki, I want to say thank you for downloading, watching, viewing, listening, and sharing this show with your friends. And we will be here every Wednesday night, 8 p.m. And until next time, holla.